to that. So if people were doing their homework, they would connect the dots down there about what it was. The sheriff's name was Eddie Apodaca, and he, I think, was also connected with that case. So, you know, we need to know who knew whom and the dates of when all of this happened and so forth.
Well, one of the things about this story is the fact that all the way back to 1945, there's evidence of UFOs prying around the area where we were developing nuclear weapons. Later on, this was carried out in nuclear silos, missile bases, all kinds of stories about that. Seems to be an ET UFO nuclear connection, don't you think?
Yeah, and it, mainly from a letter that Einstein and Oppenheimer wrote to President Truman. It's one of the Majestic 12 documents. I can send it to you if you want to. Where in June of 1947, Einstein and Oppenheimer said there was too much activity in that site, the Trinity site, and that they had had so many sightings that they had come to the conclusion that we were being visited by extraterrestrial cultures, and what were we going to do about it? That they had opened Pandora's box, and that they wanted a structure, a super United Nations, to deal with this. And this letter was sent to it was drafted, and Vannevar Bush canceled it out, said it would never go to Truman. And, of course, you know he was one of the Majestic 12 people. But why would Oppenheimer and Einstein try to address all of these sightings? Plus, they use the word extraterrestrial biological entity in the letters, in these documents. Why did they use that when Roswell had not happened yet? This document is dated in June of 1947.
Now, this particular sighting happened in August of 1945. Roswell happened in 1947 in July, 1 year, 11 months later. Seems to be a connection.
That's right. But I'm beginning to wonder how many other crashes happened before Roswell. Remy is very clear when he says the crew that cleaned up this particular crash was inexperienced because they were throwing pieces in a trench, and they were not wearing hazmat suits. They were not worried about radiation. Why would they go to the Owl Cafe and leave unattended this craft? I mean, there was not the meticulous cleaning up that was done for Roswell. So I think this is one of the first crashes ever in that area.
I assume this crash was under the control of the White Sands missile people. And that's interesting, Paula, how they handled it is different from Roswell. Roswell released a press release right away bragging about it. White Sands used to secrecy, of course, didn't mention it.
White Sands, right. It was the same guys that were there.
I wonder if those soldiers told anybody at that cafe, that bar, about what they were doing. Small town, you know, people were curious.
Oh, I don't know, but that same cafe is where Oppenheimer used to. See, this is why I believe the Oppenheimer-Einstein letter, because that's the same cafe that he used to go to when he was, you know, there were very few watering holes there in that area. There's nothing there. And so that was the only place people met. And apart from being a bar, it was a cafe and a food place. So, you know, this is 1945. They just, nobody went by there. And if it wasn't for these two little boys who told their father, the Padilla father, that about what happened, then we wouldn't have even had this story.
Interestingly enough, this was actually a story that was printed in the Socorro, New Mexico newspaper several years ago by Ben Moffat, I think, was the reporter.
Yeah, Mountain Mail paper, but then in addition, he was also a classmate of Remy's. So, you mean, they went to school together.
Yeah, is Ben Moffat still alive?
Yeah, he is. And I gave him credit when I did the interview for Coast, because he's the one that wrote the first story on it. And it was an amazingly good story that he wrote. It was in 2003, and that's what brought the story out. Now, because I'm not the first one to hear about this story. Other researchers that heard about it, Ryan Wood, has talked to them. So it came out because it was written by Ben Moffitt. So we have a lot of real responsible journalists.
You would have thought that once that story was published, it would have skyrocketed around the world. But I hadn't heard about it until you brought it to my attention.
Gary, you know, I don't know how to say this, but it has to be one of us that takes this on. And because of my position internationally, I'm a very well-known international investigative journalist. I released it first in Italy. I mean, it's been written about on two issues of X Times magazine in Italy. And then I released it secondly in the UK with UFO Matrix with Philip Mantle in that group. And lastly, I released it in the United States on a big level, because somehow when things get out here, nobody covers them and nobody takes it seriously. And so if I can do anything at all, and like you're doing right now, to tell people this is a historical event and it's real and it happened and we need to look at it, then you and I are doing the best we can to work in the United States on this.
Paula, when these two boys saw the ETs inside the craft, they were alive. Have you ever followed up or tried to follow up about what happened to the ETs? I mean, no, that's not an easy job. I mean,
it isn't. Either they have a recovery team of their own, the aliens, where they come and get their own people, or they were, you know, taken by the military, which I don't think happened, or they were loose in the desert, which I've heard of too, because in those days the ET, some of them alive, were found wandering around the desert. So, you know, all of, especially if they're connected with a ship, which Colonel Corso said they were. They were used to fly ship. They're extraterrestrial biological entities. So, you know, I don't know. Nobody knows. And all that Remy and Jose can tell you is what they saw. They saw the beings, and they'll describe them for you.
Interesting. When I talked to Jose and Remy, they brought up the chance or the idea that the beings may have just left the craft and were wandering around in the desert.
Possibility. I've heard of that, too. I mean, that the beings are, you know, kind of, they probably could wander around the desert, or maybe they were recovered by their own.
Well, we make every effort to pick up our pilots and other people down in action. Why wouldn't the ETs?
That's true. That's absolutely true. All that Remy and Jose will tell you is the following recovery, period, that they didn't see them anymore. They weren't there.
Both Jose and Remy, I talked to them both, and they seem to have some strange reactions. Once they got close to the craft, after it crashed, and they saw the creatures inside, they described it as almost sadness, like at a funeral. And they both sensed that these creatures were hurting physically. And they had other things happening to them, at least mentally. Paula, I know you pretty well. I know you talked to both of them about this and how they felt about it and the emotions and everything involved.
How did you feel when he said, I felt panicking like they had been hurt or something? And he also got pictures in his mind. He had some kind of contact with these beings, because in his later life, he explains, he's writing a book, you know, I think it's called Born in Ground Zero, Living in the Shadow of Area 51. That's his book that he spent a lot of time writing. He talks about his ability to, his ESP ability later on in his life, and his ability to predict lottery numbers right up to the end, you know, and his ability to sense things. And this could have come from contact with these beings. You know, we have to look at this. Anybody that is in contact with ET beings has an enhanced ESP ability. And I had asked Remy in detail about that. And he had told me these incidences where this happened. Now, also, he and Ginny, Virginia, had that sighting in 1994, too, so maybe there was something from that.
Yeah, I was going to ask you if that was connected.
Well, it wasn't the same kind of ship. What they saw in Washington State was a regular saucer-shaped craft, kind of round on the bottom, something like he said what was in Close Encounters. And what fell in San Antonio was an avocado-shaped craft. And you can ask Jose who lives in California, about the top part of that. It had a little, he said, almost like a little a window part or a little observatory part on the top part of that avocado shape.
Paula, it's interesting. The Sikora craft, I think in 67, was described as egg-shaped. And that's not much different than an avocado. So maybe they're related. Maybe the same thing, same people, same ETs, same craft. You know what I mean?
Well, you know, that's an important setting. Is there anybody left from that particular case? Is there any? Are there any witnesses that are still alive from, you know, Lonnie's Laura had talked to?
Unfortunately, I don't think so. Ray Stanford's still around, and we have another show to do with him. And he was the premier investigator on that, the Sikora incident.
What if they're the same kind of group? They have the same kind of avocado-shaped craft, which is round.
I think Colonel Corso told you something interesting about who he thought were flying these things.
There was something going on that very interested an extraterrestrial race. And it didn't necessarily mean that who's inside the craft is who was interested, because Colonel Corso told me that what he believed was inside the craft were the navigators for the creators of those. In other words, they were supposed to report back that the creators of these beings were probably look like us.
Very, very interesting, Paula. You know, it suddenly occurred to me we really haven't plugged the books properly. So, Paula, it's your turn. Plug away, baby.
My book is called Exopolitics, Gateway to a New Reality, Stargate to a New Reality, and it has the 53-page interview with the witnesses of the 1945 crash, but it also has interviews with pilots, with Guy Kirkwood, with Milton Torres, with Jean-Jacques Dubac, the Cometa pilot, with pilots and military men who've given me other interviews. So the book is, like all my other books, filled with interviews.
Paula, you've known me, and I've known you for a long time. We've worked together on several projects. You're like me. You seem to be speeding up, doing more and more.
Well, they're coming to me. There's more and more stories. And you know why? I mean, I just talked to Don Schmidt about this. It's almost like a race with the Undertaker. People get to be a certain age. They get to be 70, 80 years old, and they decide they're going to talk. They decide before they pass on, they want to leave this for the history of humanity, what they lived through, and they are firsthand witnesses. And they're more important than me. I'm just a reporter. They're very important, and we must record this. So I have a real passion for recording this firsthand testimony, and like Schmidt and Carey do too, for a historical event. And that's what I believe.
Let's get back to this 1945 UFO crash for a moment. I know you're going to make a presentation there in Phoenix about it, and the book will be available. This is just a shocking story. I don't know any other word to use.
Yeah, I was in shock, Jerry, because they're telling the truth, and I'm thinking, what's going on here? Like, what's happening? We have a crash that we have, not only the witnesses to the crash, but one of the little boys goes aboard the craft. And, you know, why there? Why, you know, how come this hasn't been talked about before? Certainly there must have been some military people. And you know, I'm hoping they're going to come out of the woodwork, and the people that were involved with this, we'll have more witnesses. Because when we cover a story like this, what happens is, people finally decide to talk. But as Remy said, they're going to be in their 90s or 80s, because these guys are 74 years old. And if you were in the military, you had to be at least 20 years older. So that puts you almost 90.
As we've noted on the air many times about these New Mexico UFO crashes, unfortunately, the Undertaker is winning. Many of the witnesses are now gone.
It's a race, yeah. It's a race to get the real people. And, you know, they all take an oath. I mean, even the boys, you know, were told by the military, don't talk about this, and we're not discussing. But they told Jose's father that it was a weather balloon, because and I hope Jose talks about this, they asked permission to cut the gate because they couldn't get the flatbed out to carry the weather balloon out. So, you know, that's a pretty...
Well, the old weather balloon story raises its head again. It was before Roswell, and the story is still going on.
They were going to cut this guy's gate. He has a farm, you know.
Uh-huh.
They asked permission to put a new gate on there to do all this altering. It's not their property where this thing fell. And, you know, so they had to do... The cover-up started then, but I'm not sure who was in charge in 1945.
Well, I understand.
And, but I do think, and if somebody asked me about this, because of Einstein, Oppenheimer, even Wernher von Braun, you know, I've been talking to Carol Rosen about this. You know, he knew. They knew about this kind of stuff. Wernher von Braun told Clark McClellan that he had been to Roswell and had seen the bodies. Yeah, here's a paperclip scientist who, I mean, God knows what all happened in Germany, whether there were crashes there.
I guess there's lots of reasons why we're not going to get disclosure, or it doesn't appear that we will. Paula, patents, for one thing, back engineering, everything given to private enterprise. That could be challenged.
Well, that's part of it. But you know that these craft do not use gas and oil. They do not. It's a free energy discussion, and I don't think maybe the world is ready to embrace a new kind of paradigm right now. And if these things have been back engineered, they have been back engineered without the use of fossil fuels, and we've got an economy that's based on a lot of things that could possibly, you know, just fall and crash if the truth were to come out. The other reason, they started lying a long time ago. They're going to have to admit they lied. Can you see the Air Force saying, Roswell really did happen, we lied five times with five different excuses? No, they can't do that. I don't think that's something they're going to do. I don't know how this would ever come out. I certainly don't think any president's going to announce it.
Paula, I think that's a good way to leave it. Food for thought. Thanks for being on and telling us about the 1945 UFO crash in New Mexico.
Thank you, Jerry.
Talk to you again soon.